Hello, it is September 20th, 2017, looking live at Los Angeles, California. This is episode 661 of the Willich Experience Podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach. Thank you for spending part of your day with me. It's been way too long since we talked to Allison Funder. The last time we checked with you, Allison, was actually in the midst of the storm in Houston. We're going to be back with some more regular podcasts for you now because we've got some playoffs to preview. But first, my real question is, how are you doing? How are you hanging in? You're in Houston now. How's everybody kind of recovering and hanging in down there?
Oh, I think everything is on my end of town is okay. Things on the other ends of town are not okay. So there's really not one easy, simple answer that throws a blanket over the whole thing. So I was untouched, but it's just going to be a really long time before some of these people in this wonderful city of ours ever get out from what's happening. So it's just sad. There's an entire high school, like Kingwood High School, which is in a nice suburb of Houston that is not opening this year. So like when people say to me, like, how you doing? I'm like, I'm fine. Yeah, but there's like 2,500 kids that are being bused to a high school 45 minutes away because they have no high school anymore. So, you know, that's kind of what we're dealing with. But I'm perfectly fine. I'm all good. Thank you.
All right. And of course, you are headed to New York to do the dugout. You're back on the dugout every Wednesday. I highly recommend everyone watch the dugout. I'm a big fan. I've not been on since I was at my Airbnb and the phone rang in the middle of our segment. I just assume I've been cut,
I can't really complain about. I don't think that's it. I think they just kind of have like a steady regular cast.
That show's doing just fine without me yammering phone or otherwise. Starting next week or probably the end of next week, we're going to do like we did in the past. We're going to do our short little 5-minute playoff preview shows because playoff previews are coming because the playoffs are almost here. So we're going to be doing those. I want to get us back to a short show, get us back in the swing of things before we get going back. And I think the first question I have to ask you is, hey, about Houston winning the division. I love that little stat. Someone brought the stat. They're the first team ever to win 3 different divisions.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's pretty fantastic in 2 separate leagues. I think because they won the AL West and then they won in the AL West, then this year the AL West and then passed in the NL Central. I'm assuming they're pretty excited over there. You clearly seem like Houston's had this division for a long time. There's been the ups and downs. How do they feel now that they've won the division? Kind of like, are they going to set up their rotation for the playoffs? Are they just going to keep everybody healthy? How are they going to treat the last week and a half before they really get going?
Yeah, I think they're going to keep their feet on the pedal, I guess, because there's still so much riding on this. I mean, there's going to be a huge difference between playing a division series against the Boston Red Sox and playing a division series potentially against the Minnesota Twins. I think that this is probably more important than it's ever been before to end with the best record in the American League. The Yankees should win that wild card game, but as we know, that is not a guarantee. And when you look at the mediocrity of that wild card race, you have every incentive to try to be that top seed more than ever before. And it's just so interesting. There are so many fascinating things that can happen. First of all, the Astros and Red Sox end the season at Fenway with a 4-game series. So that's the last 4 games of the regular season. And then they could potentially go right into the division series against each other. That could go 5 games. They might have 9 games against each other.
That's crazy. That's so crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's so like kooky, quirky, crazy, but it's also like strategically fascinating because like, I remember several years ago when Brad Mills was managing the Astros and Brett Myers was going to be, he was scheduled for a spring training start against, I don't remember what team it was, and they held him back and didn't have him pitch against that team because opening day was coming up and he was going to be facing that team. And they just didn't want them to see Brett like at all. I'm pretty sure it was Myers in any kind of capacity. So it's like, you don't want to show too much of what you have. And you wonder like, is AJ Hinch just going to go with the other, you know, he's got like 37 players on his roster right now. Does he go with them? But then, you know, like the guys that like wouldn't be on the 25-man playoff roster, but then at the same time, you have to try to get the best record in the American League. And the only way you can do that is with like all your best. And so it's just so interesting. But no, I don't think they're going to back off at all. They don't need to do much in terms of getting the rotation lined up because they have that long layoff in between the season ending. And when you don't have to play the wild card game, you've got like 5 days before, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday would be game one. So you really don't have to do that much, trying to get the schedule all in order the last 10 games of the season. So I don't know. I cannot wait to see how this plays out. I mean, and then the Red Sox have every bit of incentive to try to beat the Astros in those games because that's who they want to be playing. And they don't want to be playing the Indians. So if the Indians end up with the second best record, then they get the Red Sox. And it's just like, so I don't know. I just can't. I love being an outside observer who really doesn't have any, you know, fight in this game at all. And I just want to see it all play out. It's just going to be great.
I still have not quite wrapped my mind around the fact that Justin Verlander pitches for the Astros. And he looks like he's pitching great, and he sort of makes sense there. It still feels weird seeing him in an Astros jersey. I'm curious, does he start a game one or does Keuchel start a game one for them?
Yeah, that's what everyone kind of wants to know. And it's like, I was watching MLB Network today, and there was like a nice, like really pretty good banter going on because one argument was, you know, Dallas Keuchel, he is born and raised in this organization. He's the heart and soul of that rotation. Like, he absolutely should get the ball in game one. And then Ken Rosenthal said, this is the least sentimental, emotional team in the history of the world. And so they're not going to care about that. And like, Verlander might be your guy. So I don't know. I don't know which way they're going to go. Maybe it depends on who they play. Maybe it depends on, you know, the matchups, the lineups from the other team. I have no idea. It's just so funny because when they clinch a division, and like we all knew it was going to happen. It's not like it was this like, you know, burst of euphoria because they, you know, it was coming down to the end. But like, you know, Justin Verlander's in the clubhouse and he's in the celebration and he's kind of like the, you know, he's doing a lot of interviews and he's, you know, he's like the new guy. He's like this new guy that's like pitching great. And I was like, oh my God, this guy has 13 years in the big leagues. He's pitching 2 World Series. Like, this is like a guy on his way to the Hall of Fame. And it's just so funny to like that everyone's like, ooh, you know, let's like in Detroit, he was the guy. Yeah. Like, he wasn't the new guy. He's a super nice person, by the way. And he's really embraced all this. He said all the right things. So I don't think he's going to care which day, which game he gets. I think Keuchel will care if he's not game one. But again, like AJ Hinch is a people person, but the front office could not care less. So it couldn't care less. It'll be interesting.
Certainly a nice problem to have either way, but I wonder if it matters who they play too. Like, I think, you know, Boston's got a lot of left-handed hitters, for example. So
yeah, exactly. I don't think they have any idea what they're going to do right now. And I don't think they're even thinking that way yet.
But it's just pretty cool that Justin Verlander is officially, remember a couple of years ago when it looked like he was done and like it looked like he was really struggling and you wonder, and then he had this amazing year last year. He struggled a little bit this year and just turned out at the end. It's funny. Every postseason has that what great longtime player is going to get a chance to win a World Series this year, but that's never won one. And the Astros have 2 of them. They have him and Beltran. So I think that's I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting because like he's still, I mean, Justin Verlander still, you know, he was pitching great leading up to the trade. But it kind of was like Randy Johnson when he came over, like there's got to be some kind of extra something that gets in these guys when they have this completely emotional change of teams. You know, they leave the only team they've known, they go into this pennant race. You know, there might be something to that because Randy Johnson was completely unhittable. He was pitching well for the Mariners, but he wasn't. I mean, he was absolutely 100% unhittable. He said it's the best stretch he's ever had in his life and his career, which we know how long his career lasted. He says those are the best two months of my entire career. And, you know, Verlander's been, you know, so just spot on. And I think it's so interesting because since 2014 to now, like the Cleveland Indians have pretty much owned him. So if it gets to the ALCS, there's just, it'll be interesting to see like if he's, you know, like dominant or if he's the guy that the Indians have seen a lot.
It's just cool. It's just Verlander is just, he's just so much more fun. And of course, also there's nothing to remember about Verlander. This is unlike Randy Johnson when he played for the Astros. Verlander is going to be back next year. Like, he's on the contract for 2 more years. Like, this is not just a deadline deal. He's going to be around for them quite a bit, which is pretty neat. So, it'll be very exciting. All right. The only real major race after my Cardinals face planted at Wrigley Field last weekend go. It's when you get excited about the fact that you get to play the team that's ahead of you, three games ahead of you for a three-game series, until you get swept, and all of a sudden you're six back heading into that, and everyone in Cardinalland is kind of freaking out. I would argue this was never really a playoff team in the first place, so this was kind of the definitive notion of that. So the Cubs look like they're rounding into form. The Brewers are hanging in. The Brewers are hanging in, but the Cubs look to be pretty scary. Maybe the Brewers can even catch the Rockies. But to me, the two main things are kind of those AL and wild cards. And it's funny, when we had the AL wild card for a while, there were like eight teams. Now there's three, and two of them are going to make it. I think everyone's kind of falling off. The Royals were kind of a fun little story for a while, and the Mariners were going to try to make a run. But now, really, it is the Yankees who look like they're in very good position, and the Angels and the Twins kind of fighting for that last spot. It's fun. I'm very proud. Little pat on my back for the Twins are. I thought they would be second place in the division, a 500 team, and they're even better than that. People forget how many games they lost last year. When you look at those teams, because my general thing is, the Twins are exciting. Buxton has become like a star in the last 2 months. But I still feel like when the Angels made those trades, like to bring in like Justin Upton on the Angels, like changes that whole lineup. I know it's only a game and a half or two games. We got 2 weeks left. And I know the Twins have this four-game series against the Yankees, which is its own headache. Do you still favor one team? Is there one team you'd rather see in the playoffs between the Twins and the Angels?
I go back and forth because I want to see Mike Trout in the postseason. I think everybody kind of feels the same way, that you want to see the best players playing in October. No, I'm not an Albert Pujols fan, so I'm not like totally anxious for him to also get to the postseason, but whatever, you know. I mean, the Angels are a nice team, and they've certainly exceeded the expectations that I placed on them early before the season started, which was I didn't think they were going to be very good. But full disclosure, I was just in Minneapolis doing our Facebook Friday telecast. So I am like, I have the Twins in my brain. And what a lovable bunch of guys those are. Like you said, Buxton is like come into his own and is finally like that guy that they thought they were getting when they drafted him. And they've been getting a lot of heat. Not a lot of heat, but like, oh, you know, the 2012 draft and he's going to be a complete bust. And it's nice to see that he's not. And I don't know. I think that how do you not root for the underdog? Like, how do you not root for the team that lost over 100 games last year? I just think it's just a cool story and they believe in themselves and they are having a good old time. And it's fun to watch. So I think that I'm leaning toward the Twins at this point. But I think the Angels would have a better chance to hang in there in a division series. I think they'd have I don't think either one of them would really win a division series, but I sort of feel like the Angels would have a better showing.
Yeah, I think one thing I think America can all agree on, though, we're going to root for whoever wins that game, wins that chase against the Yankees. I think we can all agree on that. And I know this is not the old, unlikable Yankees. It's still... they're still the Yankees.
Well, if they were to come into Yankee Stadium in a one-game playoff and win that game, that would be amazing. I mean, the Astros did it a couple years ago. They were so much better than the Yankees just as a team, but it's in a one-game playoff. I mean, but the Yankees just came out looking like duds in that game. It would be – if the Twins went into Yankee Stadium for one-game playoff and won that, I mean – how do you not just think that's like one of the coolest stories that you've heard in a couple
particularly
years?
Particularly because the Twins, like, they always lose to the Yankees in the playoffs. That's the thing that always happens. So there were so many division series where they got wiped out by the Yankees back in the day. But it's funny, though, the Trout thing, too. The amazing thing about Trout is not only would we like to see Trout in the playoffs, let's not forget, Trout has still not won a playoff game. Like, the one time he's made the playoffs, they got swept. Joe Sheehan wrote a good piece about Albert Pujols today about how to be as kind of bad as he's been this year, it's rare that it makes a difference. Like, usually when someone is bad the way that Pujols has been this year, he's bad the way that, say, Sandoval is on the Giants right now, where it's a bad team and they're just like, go ahead and play third base because we're going to replace you in the offseason anyway. It's very rare to see a guy having as bad of a year as Pujols is, not only still in the lineup every day, but still in the lineup for a contending team. And so you can make an argument, I have a little more fondness for Pujols than you, but I think you can make a pretty strong argument that if the Angels end up missing the playoffs by like one game, Pujols has had not only the worst season in one of the worst seasons in baseball this year, but one of the most costly ones. Like if you're that bad and fall one short, one game short of not just the Angels falling short, but like Mike Trout in his prime playing as well as he has ever played with the whole world getting a chance to watch him. He's from New Jersey for crying out loud. So I know he's about to get 100 RBIs and it's Albert Pujols. He's a Hall of Famer, but if the Angels end up missing the playoffs and Mike Trout ends up not getting to be in the postseason, I think you have to point out Albert Pujols, which is kind of a sad place to be.
Well, I was watching one of the games recently. I mean, it, you know, 30 home runs doesn't mean a whole lot if you're clogging up the base paths every time, like that you can't get to first base in any capacity if you put the ball in play. I mean, he's just been embarrassed. Like Carlos Correa was in shallow left, and he fielded a ball that Pujols hit and he threw him out at first. Like watching Albert Pujols run is like watching slow motion. And I get that he's had injury issues, and his feet are just not what they should be. But it is detrimental to a team. I remember watching the Tigers, I think it was earlier this season in Houston, and I was like, this is ridiculous. I mean, they had so many slow-footed, aging veterans that just couldn't get around the bases. I'm like, you know, it's a cautionary tale that like teams absolutely will pay no attention to, and they'll keep handing out these ridiculous contracts to guys that are going to not be very good in the heart of the contract. But yeah, I mean, he's kind of killing them. Like, I think that if you took him out of the lineup, they probably end up playing better.
Yeah.
Speed is absolutely so valuable, and having a lack of speed, it can kill you. I mean, I remember, like, I always compare it to Mark Loretta, and who I adore and who is one of the best guys that I've known in this game. The slowest runner that I think the Astros had ever employed. Like, he just, and it wasn't because of any kind of injury issues. It was like, it was just the way he was made. And I'm like, that's like watching slow motion. Yeah. And sometimes, and so I compare it to, like, could Mark Loretta beat out Albert Pujols right now in a foot race? I think it'd be pretty close.
I think a lot of like animals that we associate with slowness, I think, could beat Albert Pujols in a foot race.
Oh,
right now.
My God.
It is pretty sad. And like, he's not even walking anymore. Like, that's one of the most amazing things about him.
Yeah.
See, even back in the day, he would still get on pace by walk. He's got 35 walks this year. That's so bad. Yeah. That's so
Nobody's
bad.
Scared of him. They're not afraid to pitch to him.
Yeah, I mean, no wonder Trout's getting on base all the time. Why would you pitch to Mike Trout when Albert Pujols is the same amount? And I think, you know, having Justin Upton has helped, and I think that's the exciting thing for them, is Upton's he's a good player, and he'll make a big difference. He's having a great year. But, man, it just think about the historical irony of the idea of Mike Trout is, like, maybe it's very possible the two best baseball players we've seen over the last 25 years are Mike Trout and Albert Pujols. And Trout could miss a playoff game, miss playoffs because what Albert Pujols has going on. All right, so that's the AL wildcard. We'll hold off the AL wildcard because there's a lot of balls in the air. So the last thing I want to talk about with you before we kind of set up, the kids are excited. Allison, the kids are excited about Ohtani, about Shohei, excuse me, about Shohei Ohtani. I think I'm getting that right. Right, I got that right. It's fine. I always remember this. Well, I did MLB Plus last year with Mike Petriello, and we were trying to figure out how to pronounce Urias, the Dodgers pitcher, the teenager, and we both said like five times we could never quite say it right, and someone said, like, wow, that's going to be a problem for him forever. I'm like, no, we're the ones that will all eventually figure it out. Because there was a time where you looked and, like, who is Giannis Cespedes? Like, who is that
right,
guy?
Right.
So, and then you just, like, learn the names and so on. So, Ohtani obviously will be that guy. He surprised a lot of people by, certainly, and cost himself a lot of money. He wants to go to the major leagues now. And I think that, and because of that, because of the way the posting system works, he's not going to be, otherwise, if he'd waited 2 years, he could be a full free agent and could be a whole blowaway guy. Now he is just going to, he'll get the bidding or whatever kind of upfront thing, and then he'll just go through arbitration like everybody else. That's how badly he wants to get here. Jonathan Mayo at MLB.com had a great piece where he interviewed a bunch of scouts about Ohtani as both a hitter and a pitcher, the fact that he's thrown up to 102 mile an hour. One's international scouting director says he's every bit of a top end of the rotation starter, which is exciting. And then he also says, a different guy says, he's a big, strong guy. He has a chance to be a great hitter. He's an amazing athlete. I am so excited about Ohtani. I'm so excited. This is something I've always imagined. Like, you wonder if he has to sign with an American League team. Obviously, it was a playoff race now, so we don't have to get too much into it. But certainly, just the idea that we're really finally going to have a true two-way player in baseball, I could not possibly be more excited.
Yeah, so what did – but how does that – how does this end? Like, is he really – is he really going to play – on both sides of the,
I think the, my yeah. guess, my guess is that it that he's a pitcher first. That would be my wager, is that he's a pitcher yeah. first, and then American and like an American League team gets it. And so on the days that he pitches, he hits.
And I see.
And then on the days that he doesn't pitch, he can DH or he can right. he can you can like you see how good of a hitter he is. And
right.
and it's funny because Major League Baseball is so hard that it's funny, like, because it's so exciting to see this guy. I mean, he's the best pitcher in Japanese baseball and he's the best hitter in Japanese baseball, though he's been hurt this year, but generally speaking he's considered the best in both. But it's funny because all you have to do is just take a little step down from each and then you're just a mediocre pitcher and a mediocre hitter. Like, I wonder what's going to happen when he gets over here. If he's struggling in either realm, then I this is what we do in America. We will tell him to stop the one that he's struggling. I just can already guarantee that happening, and we will make it not fun. Because for me, that, you know, the idea, he's so novel and so interesting that in a way that it's hard to imagine a manager like, say, Mike Matheny being able to handle a guy like this that can do all of those things. For me, the fun of Ohtani is that he can do all of these things. But my fear is once he gets over here, if there's one, if they're like, oh, wow, he's pitching great, but he's been 0-for-8, and then he had one bad outing. Maybe it's time to stop the hitting altogether, which takes so much fun out of it. And you wonder if even teams will bid for a guy that does both sides. I don't know. It's absolutely fascinating to see what teams will go after him and how much they'll pay and how much patience they'll have for him to do both.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, like, you raise a good point, and that would be, like, a great, like, long conversation to have. Like, what manager would be best fit to manage him? Like, who could, I mean, to me, it would be like Joe Maddon, right? Because he just wouldn't get rattled. Like, he would, like, tell the front office to go bleep themselves and then do what he wants and just keep throwing him out there and let him, you know, he would, like, give it a lot of time, and he would sell this to both Ohtani and the media and the fans, like, hey, you know, this is a great story. This guy can do both, and he's going to do both. But of course, Maddon is a National League manager, so that wouldn't be quite as much fun. But yeah, you don't want him to be with, like, a Matheny type or a manager who's basically just doing what the front office tells him to do all the time, which I guess is pretty much close to everyone right now. There might be a few rogue managers out there still. But yeah, like, somebody who's, like, confident enough to not let, like, the noise, the outside noise, like, get to them and make them, like, prematurely make decisions that maybe they shouldn't. But I think it'd just also be interesting just to see, to let him do it for a year and to see if he, you know, there's always that question about, like, if they're as effective as a hitter when they come over here. And some have been extremely successful at it, and there's others that haven't been so great, you know, both on the hitting and pitching side when they come over from Japan. So, yeah, like, who would be the ideal team if money wasn't a factor? Like, who would be the ideal team?
It's funny because money might not actually be a factor because I think there'll be a bidding process initially, but I think right. the fact of him coming earlier will puts a lot more teams into it, because you don't know how much, like, you know, with the international spending limits, some people can throw a lot, some people can't. It's just a very fascinating situation. For me, I would be fascinated to see him with someone. It's funny, like a team like a Houston or like a Cleveland, or like
Cleveland would be awesome.
Yeah, like someone with a kind of a innovative front office and a versatile manager. And it's hard to imagine. You know, Boston, it's funny because, like, I don't want him to go to Boston. Like, to me, like, Boston, like, that, like, Boston, the Yankees would be, like, the two bummer places for him to go.
Right.
And I don't even know if they're really at the top of the ability to spin there. But that's what you want. You can see, like, maybe a dark horse, like a White Sox or someone like that, or Texas or someone like that. But yeah, I don't know. It still feels like it's going to end up being the Yankees or Red Sox, which would kind of stink. But you have to. He's such like a unique snowflake that I kind of don't want to put him in a situation where everyone's going to, like, if he goes to Boston, New York, he's going to have to be awesome at both of them immediately. Hitting and pitching, or they'll rip them apart. And that's so fun. Like, that's so fun. I want, like, a low, like, to me, that's why I kind of like the idea of Houston or Cleveland, where you're like a little bit off the radar a little bit. But you're still a great team that knows what they're doing and doesn't have like insane media people that will try to destroy them every time he strikes out or gives up a run. I want his freak flag to fly, is probably what I'm saying. And I want him to be able to do that somewhere other than New York.
I think I'm voting for Cleveland. Yeah. I think I'm liking this. I'm liking this. Like, if they win the World Series, then they're going to make so much money, and they'll have more to spend, right, on bidding for him.
Oh, that would be fun. But it's funny, like, you know, John DeMayo knows this piece that you shouldn't completely rule out an NL team. They said that obviously it'd be harder because he'd obviously. There'd be no place to put him. You're not going to teach him the outfield or anything. So I think that, but even an innovative guy could maybe get him 300, according to Mayo, he'd get him 300, 350 at bats a year, which is a lot to pay for if he's not a dominant pitcher. But I don't know. It's just absolutely fascinating. I can't wait to see what happens. I kind of resigned myself to him not coming for a couple more years. So to see how eager he was to get here makes it that much more fun.
What about a team like the Twins that are like on the rise and like should be competitive for a while?
Yeah. No. Yeah. Totally. Totally. That would be fun too. And frankly, have enough like athletic dudes. The only fear with that is Sano feels like he might not be a fielder much longer already. So he almost like need the DH spot a little bit. But but I don't know. I don't know. It is a fascinating. It is a fascinating thing. Also, for crying out loud, give him a first baseman's glove. He can figure it out. He's a good athlete.
Right.
Give him a tiny first baseman glove, and everyone can use him all the time. I'm very excited. It's going to be great. Anything that's new and strange in baseball, I feel like there's going to be. I feel like we are in the last days. Of this post, when this we get to this postseason, and when the postseason World Series is over, I kind of feel like Ohtani is going to be the thing that everyone is talking about, really through spring training. So enjoy these last few moments, and we're not just talking about Ohtani all the time, because I think that's going to be happening pretty soon.
You know who might sneak in there? The team that's like real tired of not making the playoffs and has made 18,000 trades in the last 2 years.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The Seattle Mariners. Yeah,
absolutely. I can see that. I can see that would be fun. And that would be a fun team for him to play for. And a fun fan base for him to play for, too. I think
totally.
That would be a cool thing. All right, Allison. So we'll probably do one more show next week. I'm not sure yet. We'll probably do one more show next week. And then we're going to do all of our playoff shows. We'll do our brief little. If you remember last year, we did our 5-minute little preview shows of each series. I remember us desperately trying to figure out how to preview a 1-game wildcard playoff last year. That'll be fun this year. Like, I don't know. Well, what do you think is going to happen? Literally anything is a 1-game playoff. But nevertheless, it'll be kind of fun. I'm very excited. We are in. I'm going to need to talk to you on plenty of baseball stuff, Allison, because now that I've given up the ghost for the Cardinals this year. I know it's not happening. That series was as brutal as anything Cardinals have gone through in a long time. I just need my baseball enthusiasm to be revved back up so I can always do that by talking to you, Allison. So thank you, as always, for chatting with me and talking me out of my Cardinals pain.
Yeah, I'm so, so sincerely sorry.
You sound it. Yeah, you really do. You really sound sincerely sorry.
Yeah, I'm really not sad. But I mean, I have a lot of Cardinals friends, and so, you know, I feel you, but whatevs.
Yes. You like to see a scrappy underdog like that get a chance, and I think that's the bummer about it. All right, so everyone, make sure to watch The Dugout tonight on Twitter. You can find it on Twitter. You can find it on MLB.com. Allison will be on there. And I will not be because I have a terrible phone. But anyway, and of course, always please rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Follow Allison at Allison Footer, AllisonFooter. We'll be back next week with more baseball stuff. Music is by the Haraway Brothers. Have a great week. Enjoy all that non-Cardinals baseball. Bye, everyone.